This is March the 5th, and this is Bob Gilgore interviewing Doug Clark at his home at 213 Crest Drive.
Good afternoon, Doug.
Good afternoon, Bob.
How are you today?
Great.
Good. I appreciate your taking the time to let me interview you. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
It means a lot to me.
Thank you.
You're an icon in the community, and it's wonderful to have you as part of the show. I want to ask you three broad questions, maybe two. One is, what was it like growing up in Chapel Hill, and when did you grow up in Chapel Hill?
Well, I was born 6 month, 18th day, 36, on Graham Street, Chapel Hill. My parents, John Hester Clark Sr. and Rebecca Sellers Clark. And I have one other brother, John Clark Jr. And that's where I was born, on Graham. I don't know the house number. And that street at that time was a dirt street, too. My parents moved from Graham Street to Knowles Development, it was called then, which was about four blocks from Graham Street. And at that time, this was really in the country. It wasn't in the city limits. And it's another dirt street. And my parents at that time, my mother worked at the University of Laundry. And my dad worked at the South Building, and he moonlighted at night at Caroline Inn. My brother John and myself, we moved here when I was 4 years old. My brother John was six. And we used to go to school at Orange County Training School, which is now it's called Northside. And we went to school and we walked from here. They didn't let us ride in the buses then. They had maybe two school buses. And they just had consolidated the schools from the county into the city. And those two school buses picked up kids in the county. And we had to walk to school from here, rain, sleet, snow, or what, to Orange County Training School.
What was that, a mile and a half, 2 miles?
I would say from here maybe a mile, a good mile. If it was straight, it'd probably be just a good mile. Maybe crisscrossing where you'd have to go, maybe a mile and a quarter or something like that. And all the streets were dirt except Franklin Street at that time. And when I was small, the pavement streets started from Robinson Street on Cameron Avenue, and you had Franklin Street, and you had Rosemary Street, and all of the Graham and the north part of Robinson Street was dirt. All of Pottersville, Sunset, what they're called, and all that area was dirt. And we had to walk to school. And it's funny how when we leave from down here, we were like on this far end with Southwest Lane, they call it, right across the street up here, and had Tin Top, what they call, across over behind the car wash and all.
Across the railroad
track. And it was amazing how all the kids would get up in the morning, and they would start walking. It's like a little town, and like little ants come from little different areas, you know. And everybody, by the time they get to Hargrave Center, it would be like a line of kids, black kids going to school. And as you pass by houses, kids come out and everybody's talking and playing all the way to school, rain, sleet, snow, or what. At that particular time, we didn't have nothing like the Texas. Well, they had taxi cabs here, but that was a Tahir taxi. It was white, but most of the blacks didn't use them to go to school. And didn't have no street buses. And like I said, very few cars in the neighborhood. But you know, I believe my brother and I, and which I often say, we came through the best times of probably all times. Because I guess why I say this is because my brother and I, when we came along in this neighborhood here, there wasn't any street lights down here. My dad and my mom and all of them, they lobbied to get street lights. But the five houses down here had to pay extra with their light bill for those three street lights. And okay, then it wasn't with two phones in the neighborhood. We had one, and down the street, William Scott had one. And if people were calling the neighborhood for somebody, you had to go to the one and holler out and tell them the telephone was for them. But the neighborhood was just that quiet then, people could hear you calling somebody five or six doors down without you really having to go that far down. And then I think, and that was the old hand phone where you had a hook on, you know, and then the ring once is for you, twice is for somebody else, a part of mine. You know, I think we didn't know that we didn't have a lot. We thought we had a lot. I guess in the 50s, when the TV first came out, the TVs and all, TV stations used to come on at 6 o'clock and go off at 11. And you can always tell when they get ready to go off because the TV channel was signed off with Dixie. And we thought it was great with TV. And as kids, honest entertainment we had and things we had, I mean, really structured. You went to church, you went to the movies, and you went to Boy Scout meeting, and you went to all the activities they had at school for basketball, football, baseball, and they had a baseball team that came, the local team with the Chapel Hill Dons, they call them. All these guys came out of World War II and started a baseball team, and they used to play at Hargraves Field. That was our entertainment on Saturdays and Sundays. People would go to hear, to see baseball. Chapel Hill was such a close-knit area. You knew everybody, and everybody knew you. Black and white, because everybody was connected with the university one way or the other. But especially the black neighborhood was so much fun my neighborhood was like Noah's development. My mom and dad, next door from where I live, where they live now, where they built a house in 56, we had two basketball goals we built in their garden, inside their garden. And that was a neighborhood basketball court. Okay, in Pottersfield, Sunset Drive, they had, beside William Taylor, Prince Taylor's house, they had a basketball goal. That Harold Robinson, Frank Robinson, Prince Taylor, and William, James Edward and all, they built. The kids, we all done it ourselves. Okay, in Pottersfield area, James Atwater's house and Sam Atwater's house, they had a basketball court outside. And then that was where all the kids in that neighborhood played. So we started doing things like this, playing each other, those of the element going over to play, like we some big, you know, cross-town rivalry or something.
So Knowles would play Pottersfield.
Right, he'd play Sunset Drive.
Sunset.
And in baseball and softball and all, that's what we would do. And we made so many things happen. That was the photo that really, right then they started letting us go to Hargraves Center, and they had one old raggedy goal over there that would stay. We had to fix it up mostly ourselves, the kids, to even play on. but it was so close that everybody was, Chapel Hill, it's amazing. I think when we went to school at Lincoln, when we went down to school at Lincoln, it was probably, I heard somebody say one time, it was 360 kids in the whole school from 7th grade through 12th. At that time, everybody fussed ahead, and we had good basketball teams, good football teams, good baseball teams, good dramatics club, good band, good glee club, student union, great. But what it was, everybody had to double up on everything. Like in my case, I played football, I played baseball, I played basketball, and I was even in dramatics club for stage manager, and I was in the band.
That's a lot of activity.
Yeah. Every time the bus left, I was on it. But we had so much fun, everybody competing against each other. And it was such a close-knit neighborhood with our parents. For instance, the day my mom said I got a doctor's appointment and I would go to the doctor, and then as I leave the doctor's appointment, I would stop maybe at the Hollywood Grill or the M&M Grill or something. As soon as I walk in the door, all the heads would look up. And they would say, Doug, what are you doing out of school? This was people that worked there. Concerned, what you doing out of school? Why are you not in school? I mean, they would ask you these things. And they were concerned about, what are you doing? This neighborhood was just that close-knit. It's not like today. These kids, 12 years old, or what, they are out here, you don't know who's in school or out of school or what.
So you couldn't miss school without your neighbors telling you.
Not only that, but that's all right. But you know what? This is the exciting thing about it. All the happiness then were in school. You wanted to be school because so much was going on. And your teachers were so great. And then all the happiness in this town for a kid then was at school. If you got kicked out of school, I mean, you didn't want to ever get kicked out of school. That's what you didn't want to get kicked out of school. And so most of the kids, if they would get on punishment, principal would have them to help the janitors clean up the, what they call, like, disheveled coal, which they had coal stoves there. But nobody wanted to be at home because you were home alone. And can you imagine back then, half of them didn't even have TVs. Some of them had, few had radios. But couldn't that be boring? You have no entertainment. Now you have entertainment at home. But back then, no entertainment for you. You got to wait till school was out and then meet everybody maybe at Hargrave Center or whatever for you to enjoy the rest of the afternoon. I mean, it's more like you were sure enough isolated if you got kicked out of school.
You were by yourself.
That's right. And then you didn't want to get sick where you didn't. You go to sick school. I mean, school sick. And then, but...
Well, your mom and dad were both working during the day.
Right. Everybody's mom and dad was working in the day. Now, everybody was. I mean, I used to look at people like Mr. Fobine and Mr. Joe Black that worked for the city, the water line. Now, this is something you would see in a movie, you thought, but this was happening when I was a kid. The water lines, they would dig going down Mary Road. I leave in the morning, they park. This one, people still had wells around and some of them did. And all of them had outdoor bathrooms on Mary Road. Okay, these guys in the morning, you pass by, they sing, and they all of them got picks and shovels digging a water line with that hard dirt going down Merritt. They didn't have back holes and all that at that time. And you've seen it as a kid, and you look at all this progress they make, people that they made then, comparing to what it was then. And Mr. Fobine and them, we were singing them gospel tunes, religious singing, and throwing that pick in that hard clay. Now, this ain't something that somebody told me. This is something I seen. And you look at, and he had, Mr. Fobine and them had five or six kids, and Miss Merrill Bynum, that they were trying to feed, and these kids going to school. And the rest of these people didn't work for the university, worked for the sawmills, and doing all this hard labor. Now, I never forget this guy that worked, the foreman, this white man, was standing over them just like they were in prison or something. You know, the foreman himself, like, they didn't know how to dig a ditch. I mean, hell, anybody could dig a damn ditch. Excuse me for my expression. But And I can never forget this white man, I don't know his name, but he had part of his fingers cut off. But he would be there all day, sitting over guys while they dig this bit dick. They wasn't in prison, but this was their job. It's like they didn't have a black foreman, but these black guys probably knew more about digging the ditch than the white man. But it's like he's got to have overseer, you know. But I look at that and look at how my dad used to work at the South Building way back too. He didn't have the time to spend with us and he didn't get a chance to see many games. He saw a few parades the band had and all that. My dad would go to work in the morning, go to South Building to work before he started working at the post office. And then when he leave there, he'd go straight to the Carolina Inn to work. He probably would get home at 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
What'd he do at the Carolina Inn?
He was a waiter, waiting tables. But at that time, like I said, there wasn't that many blacks around it, and like he was doubling up on jobs. And my mom worked at the Universal Laundry, then she went from there to the University Cleaners, and then during World War II, she sold insurance for North Carolina Mutual Insurance Company. And then she stopped working for North Carolina Mutual Insurance Company when she started nursing. And that's where she ended up retiring as a nurse. And then I guess I look at my brother and myself. My brother, it's a lot more I can tell, but all that's not coming to me now.
Let's go back to your mom and dad and talk about them some more.
Okay.
Does it sound like they were ever home?
Well, most black families wasn't at home. Okay. Number one, with us, you said wasn't at home. On Tuesday night, we had Boy Scout meet. That was Hargrave Center. My mom and dad, what was asked of me and my brother John, come home after school, do your homework. I had to get in the cold. He had to get in the kennel. Okay, then you can play and do your homework. And then on Tuesday night, you went to Boy Scout meet. Friday and Saturday night, all black kids on Friday and Saturday. You couldn't go to movies when you're young in the middle of the week. Friday and Saturday, Friday mainly, the rest of people, you can go to the movie. Now, you didn't want to get on the punishment, because if you go on the punishment, you can't go to the movie. Excuse me one second. Kill it one second. Okay, they had chapter pictures at the movie, which on Friday and Saturday, all the kids want to go, because they had a chapter picture.
Serials.
Yeah, uh-huh, with Shambo and Tarzan, what it used to be way back. And
what was the name of the movie?
Hollywood Theater.
All black?
It was all black, owned by white. Okay, next door to it, they had a place called, well, Mr. Jeff Fashie and his wife, I can't think of the name, they had a place next door, like a soda bar. You know, sold sodas and candies and all that right next to it. That's where all the kids communicated. After basketball practice and all, that's where you went at night. Because Hollywood Grill and Eminem Grill, that was more for the older guys that were selling beer, but this place didn't sell beer, you know. Okay, that's where everybody would congregate after basketball games, after football games, and all at the theater, which was right next door to Fashie's. Okay, but later on, Ben Ballins, the Ballins, they ran this place. And this is our place for our soda shop, for hot dogs and hamburgers, ice cream, and stuff like this.
What street was that on?
Right on Franklin Street, right in Carver Line. This was your social life. On Sundays, when your parents preferred for you to go to church, your parents preferred for you to go to the movies on Friday night. Because Sunday they wanted you to go to church. And in order for you to stay out on Sunday late in the afternoon with your girlfriend, that's when you really saw home, really on Sundays. And you go to Sunday school and you go to church, and they had the Hollywood Grill and had the Eminem Grill. And one was the Hollywood Grill is the Hollywood Grill was right where the Hollywood Cab stand is, right beside McDonald's, which this building is still there. I don't know the name of the restaurant in there, they called it. Anyway, kids would walk on Sundays. On Sundays, the walk would be from Hollywood Grill to Ben Baldwin's all day long on Sundays. Kids walking. It's just like parading to see, this person been uptown here, that person been uptown. And you know, you can't miss them by walking. You just walked on Sundays. But after we got out of church, everybody got out of church, the first place you would go, you go to Milk Dairy, right across the street. They got all the business from all the churches. Okay, you bought all ice cream and milkshakes there on Sundays, but you couldn't sit down in there to eat it. Okay, then Colonial Drugstore opened up later on, with Big John opened up that. That's where every black in town bought, filled all the prescriptions for prescription drugs there. It wasn't a chain drugstores here. You had Sutton Drugstore and a few of them downtown, but on this end of town, that's where everybody got the prescriptions filled. Okay, that's where all the people used to walk from on Franklin, young kids, and older people getting the prescriptions filled on, and Big John had a soda fountain. He sold ice cream and stuff like that, but you couldn't sit down as a black person and to eat.
I also heard that Big John had a way of giving change.
I'm going to tell you what he's done with me. I don't know is later on in my comments. I used to work for, when I started my band, and we always get paid in checks from the fraternities and sororities. Now, he was the only one who would cash that check on Sunday for me. He didn't have enough cash, then he'll tell me to come back at such a time he had a cash. And I wanted to do that, so Monday when I went to school, because all the guys in the band went that time in school, so I'd have that money for them, because I couldn't get out of school to go to the bank to cash the check, you know. So he was good. Not only that, Big John was good to the black neighborhood back then for the prescriptions, giving me good and buying things. The only thing that happened to Big John is when Blue Cross Blue Shields moved next door, and all these white people used to eat in Big John's. Then you had most undesirable rednecks from Carver, they could go to the same drugstore. And I think he was trying to satisfy too many people when the integration came along. He thought probably he didn't want to lose his white base that he had. Okay, but he lost his white base, in other words, when integration came along, he didn't want to integrate the place. He couldn't see ahead. He thought Blue Cross Blue Shield was going to be there forever. He thought it could do without black community. Only thing I disliked about what Big John done, he had some boys. They had three kids. Black folk on the outside had signs for trying to integrate the place. He had his sons on the inside walk with signs like "nigga, nigga, black as Todd stuck his head in Lance's jaw," stuff like that. Okay. Everybody, and that's the worst thing you can do in a case like that in a black neighborhood is make the black churches mad. Now, you got to pull, all these ministers got to pull a pit out, you know, and they got all these, and so all black folks stopped going to Big John. They just stopped going. They boycotted him. I mean, Big John had gotten so big that he opened up downstairs before all this happened. His business was so great, downstairs he put up a toy shop and everything. He'd done all these things, you know, because he had such a tremendous business, you know. Okay, messed around there. Blue Cross Blue Shields built a new building. They went on 15501. Here's Big John. He just built this big, fine house out of Dogwood Acres. Big John ended up owing his creditors and went broke and everything. Couldn't even put drugs in this drugstore. He sent his son, one of his sons, a pharmacist school. and his kids to college, and he was right in the middle of doing all that. Big John got as humble and as liberal as hell after that.
How did you know that he got liberal?
Well, even he wanted to come to Hall of Fame and sing with my band. He wasn't no singer, but he thought he could. And we invited him. He was trying to do everything to try to mend fences. But well, at that time, other places had opened up, other drugstores, chain drugstores that popped in the town. There wasn't no comeback for him.
Now, that was after Harold Foster and others sat down in
1960.
He didn't integrate until what, after 64?
Well, after Blue Cross Blue Shields left. I don't know what year that was when they went on the boulevard. And it was a long while. But see what happened. All these white rednecks in Carver and all of them, they didn't give them enough stuff in these new drugstores over in Carver and all the places. They went where was convenient for them. And, you know, he was trying to satisfy, everybody. He was trying to satisfy a few. And he was right in the heart of the black neighborhood. So if you're right in the heart of the black neighborhood, who do you satisfy?
He didn't satisfy the black people.
And I think that's why way back, I don't mean to change the subject, I guess that's why way back the Jews mostly would go in the black neighborhood. I asked one friend of mine, a Jew friend of mine, I asked him one time, I said, man, that's why y'all see all these charcuterie colors, all these loud colors and all this stuff and this and that and other, and y'all in the black neighborhood. He said, because y'all own us one bar.
So I didn't catch that.
Y'all are the honest ones that buy this stuff, you know. And I thought that was real, because in other words, they sold what black people wanted. Mm-hmm.
And
that's right, and they made a whole lot of money. Now, you think back, average white man didn't ever open up a business way back in the black neighborhood. It was always a Jewish person. And for the jewelry stores, the clothing stores. I remember here in Chapel Hill way back, it was a store called Berman's Music Store. I mean, a clothing store, Berman's Clothing. They sold some of everything. And E.A. Brown, but they catered to blacks. So, I mean, if you're prejudiced, you better put it in your pocket and run away. Don't let everybody know you are. And especially in Chapel Hill, that particular town, because where the university was liberal up to a certain extent. But they wasn't totally, you know, I mean, they still had the prejudices, but in my travels and things I've been doing, as a whole, they weren't as bad as most places I've been. And I think what it was with everybody in Chapel Hill working for the university, and it was more when you start finding white businesses trying to tell you how to, they don't want you in your place, but they want your money. I never forget as a black kid at Chapel Hill Tire Company, the owner of Chapel Hill Tire Company at that time, I had some tires put on. Man told me it'd be about $42, $43. I went back up there, it was $70-something. And I said, well, he said, well, we done this, we done that, we done. I said, but I didn't ask you to do this. He said, well, this is what we done. You needed this and needed that. And I said, well, we agreed on, that's all I could pay. So we argued, he didn't want to give my keys, but I had another set of keys. I took my car, laid the money up there and went on by my. So he took out a warrant from me. Mr. Jennings. But my thing is, it's like people going to make you pay for something that you didn't order. And at that time, I stopped doing business with him. I ride all the way to Durham, the Rigsby Tire Company. And Rigsby Tire Company, their buddy, and Lyman, and Rigsby, they treated me like a king, you know, for the business. And I carried a lot of my friends on over there with me. But my point is that a lot of these businesses, like the Nord Brothers, some of the last ones that wouldn't integrate, Nord Brothers used to be right on the end of Church Street and Franklin Street, when they had an Exxon station there. It was two Exxon stations kind of close together. And they for years, even after integration, they didn't want you to use a bathroom. They didn't want you to use that bathroom. They had white, and then they had black. And way back when they had white, and then they had women. No, they had white, women, and then black. At halftime, the black bathroom would be locked. And the Norwood brothers own that. But we had, other than, like I said, other than the university was pretty decent compared with, I didn't work for them, so I can't speak for other people in Chapel Hill, but I'm just so much, you know, from me, I know some of them didn't have, you know, things go good for them, but Chapel Hill as a whole, I think with me as a kid, and most of black kids, you're talking about integration. Well, we didn't know, we never experienced it. We didn't know what it was like, what integration would be like. We were so used to being separate and doing, but we knew it wasn't fair when we get a book in school that's got a new back on it, which you don't know, but the teacher said turn to page 14, and you get, it stops at 10, and it skips to 24. That means the page is out. The book's been rebound, you know, fixed up, and they give them to the black. After they wear them out of Chapel High School, they give them to the black school. But it looks new on the outside. And then...
What about your desks and lockers and things like that?
They didn't have no lockers.
No lockers.
Didn't see no lockers. Your desk was where somebody done wrote all the little card in it and the niches in it and all. And
from the white school?
Yeah. Hand-me-downs. And half of the time, way back at when we were at Orange County Training School, the boilers and the heating system was always messed up. And you can forget air conditioning. We didn't have no air conditioning at Lincoln or Orange County Training School. You opened the windows and that was it. Not even fans they didn't use back then. And, I tell you, I have enjoyed my life in Chapel Hill. I really have. I enjoyed the kids and what I really hate when I was coming up and I don't see now. From Ham's restaurant. From there, all the way to Carver, where railroad track. Most of the black people used to own that property. Very few spotted people, white people own property during that time, in between that. And from what I can understand from Ed Caldwell and a few others, there was a man named Mr. Baker used to own all that property. And then in Franklin Street, I heard it wasn't paved. And when they paved it, they had to tax the people on the property. And some of them lost their property because they refused to pay taxes for something, you know, they didn't agree to see. And then again, a lot of them lost their property again on Franklin Street again because it's got to be commercial property. And they wouldn't make enough money to pay their taxes from the university. We were just paying slave labor, slave salaries, you know. And they didn't make enough money to even feed the families, much less pay the taxes, especially on Franklin Street. They fixed it where it was the commercial zone to the taxes is higher on Franklin Street than probably, you know, you see on Lindsay Street or someplace, because they wanted the property.
You remember about when that happened, when they started losing property on Franklin? Was that in the 40s or 50s?
Well, I think it's appeared over the years. And, from Henry Baldwin's woodyard all the way in Carver, he owned a big spot out there, and I don't know all the property owners, but blacks used to, from Franklin Street all the way off, then they started moving houses off from Franklin Street and putting them on Graham Street, you know, the big houses. And there used to be a wood yard right there on the corner of Graham and Franklin. The Chapel Hill Funeral Home used to be there beside that before they moved it on Graham. It used to be on Franklin Street. The Scarborough buildings, which they had a whole section in there, about 6 or 7 units. All black businesses used to be in that. And it was, Scarborough was black. You want some water? Something?
No, I'm fine.
And Scarborough on Scarborough, Funeral Home in Durham. Yeah, Dad. And they used to have a funeral home in Chapel Hill, too, and before they moved to Durham. And they had them in both places. And then had W. O'Kelly. He had dry cleaners, and he owned the funeral home way back then. W. O'Kelly's funeral home. But my mom can talk more about that than I can. But I seen so much when I was small, and seen how much has grown. And we were right at the end of silent movies into talking movies when I was a little boy. I remember going into the old theater up there on the corner of Grimm Street and Franklin Street, the old theater where they had the chairs and the silent movies. And I remember when they built and when they started going to the Hollywood Theater. And so you seen so much. And I used to go every summer out in the country with my uncles to visit. I had a fantasy about animals, and I love horses, I love mules and stuff like that. And in the summer, I'd go out to my Uncle John's, Uncle George's, and my Grandma Mary's house, and help them plant tobacco, and be around them for us plant tobacco. And I never forget, I went out there 1 week, and the size of horses and all, it was bored, and they very boring, because I didn't really have no, my cousins just stayed so far away, I didn't have anybody to play with, and there was a lot of older people. But we came to town on the wagon, came through Carver, people want to throw rocks at them, and all that, coming through Carver, and if your white people in the car, bro. And they come to bring the goods to over here to sell, you know, the stove. And when they get ready to leave, right up here on Mid-Mirrold, they had an ice house where they sold ice, right at the corner of Mid-Mirrold and Franklin Street. The Hackneys used to run that. And they'd buy a 75-pound block of ice. And my uncles, after they sell the goods to the stores and all, and before they get ready to go back to the country and all, they go by and get some ice. And they get a big old block of ice, about a 75-pound block. And they put it on a truck, and they have all these sacks and stuff they put over to keep from melting on a hot day in the summer. Okay, we strike out to go back to the country. On back through Carver, on across the University Lake, you know. And it's an amazing thing that I was wondering how they was going to keep this ice. Okay, he had a hole in the ground. And these sacks, cocoa sacks, or whatever you call them, he had the ice in that. And they put it in the ground and surrounded all with sawdust. Sawdust that come from a sawmill. And that sawdust would keep that ice from melting. And we, the big thing back then, the people out there didn't have electrolytes. So they just had what you call it, this old carbonator or whatever you call it. And they would come up with lemonade and stuff like that. And they'd have once a day at night, not in the middle of the day, at night they have lemonade or something. That's what they done with the lemonade. And that block of ice, that 75-pound block of ice, will last about a week. And that's that. I mean, I'm just looking how people survive then. And I look at, like, people, especially farmers and people, like, they didn't put up enough food, like a, you don't put nothing up, you won't have nothing. Because tenant farming and all that back then, just hard on people that was farming. And I look at like way back my dad and my uncles, my Uncle Dolphus Clark and my Uncle Palmer Clark, they would always have a pig, two or three pigs they buy a year. So they'd kill them in the winter and then put it all in the smokehouse where you'd have the fat back and the ham and the tenderloin and all that during the winter. That was the meat. Then way back, you'd always find guys going hunting on the weekend. And I didn't realize they're going hunting, rabbit hunting, and going to a squirrel hunting. And wasn't no deer in this area then. And they would go, some of them would go coon hunting. And a lot of them would go fishing. And I didn't realize later on, they were going fishing and hunting for food to really put on the table. That was supper. I mean, they caught that fish that day or what? They cleaned them, ate it that night. Either those rabbits. For the week or so, they got them clean and skin, and they cooking them for that because they just didn't have the money. My dad was telling me when he first started working the South building, he worked on Sundays. He made $8 a week, and that's a half a day on Sunday at the South Building University. He said he had to pay E. Brown was to rent the house for $50 a week. So right there's a month. That's $2 a month for rent. So okay, this rent's got to come out. That's at least with $6 for him to do what he's got to do.
He made $8 a week.
Uh-huh.
And he had to pay $50.
A week.
Rent?
Rent.
That's $200 a month.
Yeah,
He's making $32 a
month. But he ain't making $2. No, I'm sorry. Let me back up. I'm wrong. He made $8 a week.
Right.
And he had to pay 50 cent a week. So it was $2. I'm wrong. Okay. And that's what he had to pay then. Okay, I'm wrong. I was wrong with that.
So he paid $2 a month for rent.
Right.
And made $32 in salary a month. $8 a week.
Yeah.
A week.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so then I was whole.
What kind of house did you live in, Doug?
Okay, up on Grimm Street, we were fortunate. We had a bathroom was on the back porch with running water. That was in the ceiling, but we didn't have a bathtub. We had to take a bath and heat the water for a tub, tin tub. And we thought it was luxury. All this luxury we get when we moved to Nose Street in Nose Valley. Because listen to this, my mom and dad moved in here, I think it was 1941. The university fixed it where anybody who worked for the university, custodians all, they'd build a house for them. They would finance it if they wanted it. Okay, we came down here, every house down here was plastered on the inside. Had water, separate tanks and water, bathroom, plastic, warm house, underpinned and all. Nice house was nice compared to back in those days. Okay, my dad and mom, I saw the deed to the house. Guess what it was? They paid $1,800 for the house, $1,800, and the mortgage was $14 a month. Move it up, wasn't it? but they wasn't making that much money. $1,800 the house cost them, and they paid $14.
How long did it take them to pay off the house?
I don't know. I don't know exactly. how many years that was that paid off the house, you know. But at that time, they wouldn't make it on money, and you would probably make the day with the expenses, you know, the way things were. I looked at how my dad was just a workaholic. I'll give you a good example. He didn't care nothing about a whole lot of extravagant things. He came out of World War II. Guess what? He drove a truck, ammunition truck. Most all blacks did, because it get blowed up. So everybody in his squadron, most all the blacks, they drove ammunition trucks behind the German lines to supply the troops with.
So they gave the high risk
jobs to blacks.
Jobs to the blacks.
Mm-hmm.
In the war.
Mm-hmm. And so my dad came home and, way back in the early 50s, when all the soldiers were coming home, some of them buying cars and all that, my dad wouldn't buy a car. We used to want them to get a car, like everybody else in the neighborhood. My dad wouldn't buy a car. And my dad rode a bicycle back and forth to work every day. And if he went to church, he would go to church sometime. He had First Baptist, but his church was Hall River Baptist Church in Chatham County. And his brother, Uncle Doc, Dolphus Clark, would take him to that, you know, the church.
Did he have a car?
Yeah, my Uncle Doc did, Dolphus did. And, but they were, he and his brother was very close. Anyway, move up a little bit. My dad, later on, I got married and all, and I moved in this house here. And my dad, my parents had built a house in 56. Next door, and they rent this house out for a while. I got married, and a couple of years after, these people moved out, and I moved in here. And step it up a little bit. Back in 1964, I never forget, I had already taken a 1954 Chevrolet and customized. I put bucket seats in a photo car, ain't this something? New headlining, new muffles, new paint job, new everything. Plus, I had a 62 grand.